US inflation numbers today and decision time from the Bank of Canada and the RBNZ, plus a dive in small business optimism in the United States in the latest NFIB survey. We'll look at what that means, and we'll look into yesterday's NAB business survey and consumer confidence. Plus, I got something wrong yesterday. Nothing unusual in that, I hear you say. I'll explain what and why. It's Wednesday, it's the 10th of April, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, the US dollar has dipped and recovered, and it's basically where it was yesterday. Whereas the euro is down a bit, the pound up almost 0.2%. The Aussie once again has outperformed. It's up a third of 1% to 66.3 US cents. And US stocks much weaker today. The Dow and the S&P were in the red much of the session. In fact, the Dow stayed there at close, only just though. The S&P managed a 0.15% gain at the close. The Nasdaq closed up 0.3%. The Russell 2000 was up a third of 1%. Big falls in Europe, though. The Euro Stoxx 50 closed down 1.1%, 1.3% lower for the DAX. And bond yields falling 5 basis points off 10-year treasuries to 4.37%. 6 basis points off 10 years for Germany, France, the UK, in fact, much of Europe. Aussie 10 years, well, they fell 2 basis points yesterday to 4.17%. Now on futures, they are following the global trend and falling another 5 basis points overnight. And big moves in oil, down 1.3% off WTI, 1% off Brent, which is back down below 90 a barrel. Gold still rising, though, up 0.7%, almost reaching 2,385 this session. Every day, a new high for gold lately. By the way, yesterday, I talked about Bitcoin halving, and I got that totally wrong. I talked about as though Bitcoin was being divided, so 70,000 became 35,000, that sort of thing. So, you know, if you went shopping with it, it'd be a lot handier because the shopkeeper wouldn't have the embarrassment of saying, I'm sorry, I don't have change for 70,000. But nothing of the sort. It's actually halving means halving the reward for Bitcoin miners as a way of restricting supply, so keeping prices higher. Obviously, it's an entirely unregulated environment, except when it isn't. But I'm told this has happened in the past. There were massive gains followed by a massive correction. So we'll see what happens there. Today, it's Taylor Nugent from NAB in Melbourne who joins us, a man who doesn't do anything by half. And a bit going on today, Taylor. I think we should start with the takeout from yesterday's NAB business survey. Not a lot of movement in there, but some hope in retail and construction where there were improvements in current conditions and business confidence. What else did you pick out of it?
Yeah, good morning, Phil. As you say, kind of not much top tier market news and pretty small movements across markets, but a fair bit of survey data to sift through globally, and then our business survey key among them. So I think that the headline there is that conditions are still pretty resilient. They're at +9, down from +10, but certainly up from where they were a couple of months ago and above their long run average of around +7. We saw trading conditions and employment sub indices pretty stable in the month, and so, you know, all suggesting a picture of resilience and maybe even a little bit of improvement over the last few months. We see confidence still somewhat soft. It was up in the month though, +3 points to +1, not too far below its longer run average, but you know, certainly the confidence measure isn't suggesting too much optimism about the outlook still. And we also saw in the month that profitability index sliding as well. So that drove the small decline that we did see in the overall conditions index. And so potentially suggesting that the kind of slowdown in growth that we've seen recently is a more challenging environment for firms to be passing on cost pressures that do still remain in the system. I think for me, broadly, the survey is one in which, you know, there's positive news there. While there are certainly signs of resilience across some of the direct activity indicators, across some of the forward-looking components, we saw forward orders improving a bit as well. I think the key thing there, though, is that it looks like there's still progress on moving more towards balance and some of those inflation pressures easing. So capacity utilization still high at 82.3, but you know, gradually easing looks to be the trend there, and some improvement across pricing indicators as well. So again,
yeah, I mean, that sounds like an old school report of mine. So there's some improvement, gradual improvement. What you're talking about is slow change in all of this. So nothing here to shift the dial for the RBA.
No, nothing particularly narrative shifting. There is, you know, there's some glimmers of hope across those pricing indicators. Will, you know, labor costs was a little bit softer, but still high at +1.6, down from +2. We saw final prices down at 0.7 from 1.2. That's a pretty big improvement. Mining was a big help there. We saw mining final prices ease, a bit more stickiness across retail. But, you know, we will want to see this, and the RBA will want to see this confirmed in progress in the hard data, of course.
And we had a bit of a fall in consumer sentiment as well, didn't we, yesterday? Down 2.4% to 82.4, with a sharp fall in buying conditions.
Yeah, so interesting, that kind of consumer confidence piece. This has been a feature globally, but certainly in Australia as well. It has been sluggish, and more sluggish than the business conditions that we get out of the NAB survey, and a little bit out of line with resilience in consumer spending as well. I think, well, a couple of months ago, we saw a pretty sizable increase in consumer confidence, and now we've had 2 months of a small decline. So I think there, you know, potentially that increase that we saw, and it would have been the February month, I think, was, you know, a bit of a false start if we were hoping some of the progress on inflation was going to kind of, you know, more meaningfully show up in a sustained move off the bottom for consumer confidence. But, you know, we're not taking too much signal from kind of the kind of small declines that we've seen over the last couple of months. I think elsewhere in that survey, you know, some of the falls this month were driven by a time to buy a household item. If you look at the sub conditions on family finances, both over the past year and in the expectation, both of those improved a little bit. And we're also seeing consumer unemployment expectations have kind of stabilized, if not improved a little bit over recent months as well. And so that, you know, consistent with what we've seen from the labor market data recently, potentially suggests some stabilization in kind of consumers' confidence in the labor market, and their concerns about kind of job loss and other things certainly aren't worsening, even as they deteriorated fairly meaningfully from the very tight conditions of 2022 into the first part of 23. They've been more stable since. So that's a good news story as well, that there isn't kind of rapid further deterioration there. And that should, you know, consistent with our outlook for things to start picking up from kind of the second half of this year, alongside improved real income backdrop, if that labour market cannot deteriorate too much in the meantime.
Now, it's the RBNZ decision today, but before we get that, they had the quarterly survey of business opinion yesterday, which showed inflation is heading down and firms finding staff easier to get, suggesting the unemployment rate's going to rise and wage inflation is going to ease. All of that sounds good, doesn't it? But not enough for the RBNZ to move, though. It's 5.5%. They're expected to stick on that. They've been sticking on that for a while. It's not Table Mountain, is it? It's been stuck there for so long. These are the plains of the Serengeti that the RBNZ is on. So tell us about the survey and tell us about the RBNZ.
Yeah, I mean, so the themes are probably going to sound at a high level similar to what I was just talking about with Australia, I guess.
Well, like my report card, slow progress.
Progress, certainly, maybe not quite so gradual in the New Zealand survey. Things do seem to have weakened more materially in that NZIER QSBO survey. The kind of change from the previous quarter looks probably larger than kind of the underlying deterioration, just because there was kind of a bounce after the election in some of those sentiment indicators. But, you know, we've seen there that the survey is kind of, you know, it's consistent with broadly weaker activity indicators. The labour as a constraint on output has cooled pretty materially and is no longer especially elevated relative to history. Firms are finding it easier to find labour. And so all of that is kind of consistent with some further increase in the unemployment rate going forward in New Zealand. And it looks like capacity utilisation is moderating as well. And so all of that suggests, you know, further progress on inflation, so similar themes, but certainly the indicators there about how quick that easing in capacity pressures in the New Zealand economy is from that survey, you know, suggests a faster easing than what we're seeing in Australia out of the NAB survey. But for the RBNZ, as you say, you know, they're not there yet. They're not comfortable yet. For the RBNZ today, they're unanimously expected on hold. We don't get new projections either. And the data flow really hasn't given them too much reason to kind of rewrite the framing that they presented in February. And so, you know, no changes expected there, and we don't think there's, you know, any reason they would try and signal a shift in view.
Right. And a bit of news from the United States. Small business, not happy, Jan. The NFIB Business Optimism Index is down from 89.4. It was expected to pick up a little, but no, it fell to 88.5, which is actually the lowest level since 2012, which is a bit disturbing, you know, given that they were happier during the pandemic, apparently.
Yeah, so the decrease in the month was kind of, you know, potentially overstated. There was an 8-point plunge in the sales expectations index, which does seem to be fairly volatile month to month, but the softness was reasonably broad-based. And I think, you know, one caveat with small business surveys, especially the kind of survey indicators in general, is they can tend to pick up some kind of political factors, and we know that the NFIB survey tends to be stronger under a Republican presidency than under a Democratic presidency, and so that has been kind of weighing on the level since during Biden's term. But in the detail here, what we can see is that, you know, that tends to impact the higher level questions about the economy more broadly, whereas the kind of narrower questions about specific business performance tend to be a little bit less subject to those kind of higher level political biases. And so what we can see there is that there has been some kind of continued deterioration in those segments of the survey that tend to be less sensitive to those political considerations as well.
That'd also be the response, wouldn't it, to the fact that interest rates now, that, you know, they're looking like they're going to stay higher for longer. So they'd be responding to that as well, because the cost of borrowing is going to stay high.
Yeah. So, you know, credit conditions is, you know, one part of the survey that's not, that's certainly not as positive recently. And I think, you know, we're seeing some weakness here despite strength in equity prices as well, which, you know, probably suggests that, you know, there is certainly across the small business sector. So that's, you know, mostly services firms, but a lot of manufacturing firms as well. This is suggesting that there is some softness in the outlook. The employment indicators of that survey were out ahead of payrolls, but, you know, are also consistent with some further weakening in the labor market as well.
Well, imagine small businesses, they're closer to the customer as well, so they'd be seeing and feeling the hurt in the households more so perhaps than manufacturing businesses. But, you know, just a thought. Now look, Neil Kashkari was out talking yesterday at the University of Montana. He said the Fed can't stop short on the inflation fight. He says the labor market is not red hot like it was 12 months ago, but it's still tight. So, I mean, you would be very optimistic if you were still looking for June rate cut now, wouldn't you?
Well, there is still a little bit of data to go under the bridge. We've obviously got CPI coming up tonight. We get another CPI ahead of June. But, you know, the data would need to, you know, there's this balance between the risks of cutting too early and the risk of waiting too long, and the resilience that we're seeing in employment and activity data is, you know, not suggesting that the risks of waiting another meeting or two are particularly elevated at the moment. So I think you would have to see some turn in the employment and activity data, as well as no more bad news on inflation. But, you know, it's certainly not impossible, and certainly market pricing kind of reflects that there's a pretty decent chance that June is still on the table as well, up around a 60% chance of a cut in June. So, you know, despite some of the commentary, you know, it's certainly still possible. You know, while a lot of the headlines from Kashkari overnight, from he spoke a couple of days ago as well and got some headlines are saying that if inflation stalls, then they might not be cutting at all this year. You know, his base case is still two cuts. His base case is still for continued progress on inflation. So, you know, it shouldn't be that revolutionary that if the forecast for inflation is wrong and inflation comes in higher than he and other FOMC participants expect, then the monetary policy response would be different in that environment. So, you know, I think that the base case there is still for continued progress. But, you know, as you say, the kind of the concerns, that balance of risks with the resilience in the hard data, you know, it probably has to shift before they start to deliver cuts.
That was such a great each way bet answer there. You know, I'm gonna timestamp that, and next time they're looking for someone for the RBA, I'm gonna send that off. And he speaks our language. That's fantastic. So of course, the big number today, as you mentioned, is U.S. inflation. Late tonight, Aussie time, the headline rate year on year was 3.8%. It's only expected to fall to 3.7%. It's moving very slowly, isn't it? 0.3% month on month. Michelle Bowman is making a speech 15 minutes after those numbers as well today.
Yes, and I think worth noting there as well, the expectation there is a 0.3% month on month for core. The average of the forecasters is at 0.28, and there is a little bit of a lower skew there as well. And so given the sensitivity to this print, given how much is riding on this to confirm that the kind of that read of January and February CPI is as a bump, not a shift in trend, you know, I think, you know, even anything on the high side of a 0.3 may be enough to kind of further pair expectations of a June cut. But, you know, the skew of the forecasters there is kind of, you know, towards the low end of a 0.3.
So go for the second decimal place is what you're saying, really, just to be sure how big the move is.
Yeah, that's right. Doing my best Ray Attrill impression. I'll make sure you look for the second decimal place on the CPI number.
If you go to two, he's going to go to three. You do realise that, don't you? after midnight as well, the Bank of Canada, they are expected to hold, but very high market expectations now for a cut in June from the Bank of Canada.
Yeah, and so we've seen inflation numbers, on the good side in Canada recently. We've seen kind of continued deterioration in the labor market as well. And so, you know, too early for the Bank of Canada this month, probably. There's only about 10 to 15% chance priced into markets. Cuts not expected, but certainly in the post-meeting presser, given the recent run of data, there's a potential for Governor Macklem to sound a little bit more dovish. And I think that'll be where the focus is as markets look at that kind of, you know, is June going to be the kickoff month, and is there potential for market pricing to deepen a little bit for that June cut?
So, of course, they give you the full chapter and verse, don't they? We get the decision, the accompanying monetary policy report, then everyone has 45 minutes to absorb it all before we get the press conference. So we get all of that. And then, you know, we've got to wait for the FOMC minutes, but we don't have to wait too long now because, by coincidence, the minutes of the last meeting are out tomorrow morning, just before our podcast tomorrow. So we'll talk through all of that tomorrow. Good to talk today, though. Catch you soon, Taylor.
Thanks, Bill.
And quickly before we go, thanks to Matthew who pinged me on LinkedIn. He's a real estate agent in Piedmont. And I said yesterday, I wonder what the average age for the first home buyer is now. And I cynically suggested, you know, these days it's probably around the age of 46. So he said, you know, it's heading that way because the average age in Sydney now is 36. So not as bad as I suggested, but that is still a problem, isn't it? We are not alone in this, though, because it's 35 in America, 34 in the UK. When I was in my 20s when I bought my first home, and then I rather foolishly sold it off, and then the Sydney market went crazy and I couldn't really afford to get back in, and I think lots of young people are obviously in that position. Anyway, that's it for today. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. Back again tomorrow. I'll see you then. Thanks for joining us today.